And my name is Jill Stockbridge, and I'm Derek Sykes's master student. I've been working on this project for the past 4 years, and I have finally come to the point where I'm writing my thesis, and I hope to be done hopefully by the spring or the summer and finally move on with my life. But this has been a really good experience, and I just I'm pretty excited to show you guys some results. So, harvesting trees is one of the most significant human disturbances today and converts old growth forest stands into these clear cuts, which then become these young even age forest stands. And this may cause the decline of old growth forest specialists. Here's a picture of an old growth forest site where the trees are very large. It would probably take about 2 or 3 of me to wrap my hands around some of these trees. And also within these old growth forest sites, you have gaps within the forest canopy where an old tree has fallen over and died. And this allows some light to penetrate through this canopy, allowing for some different kinds of vegetation and animals to survive in this type of environment. And the picture looks great on the computer, but not on the screen. So this is a picture of a clear cut site where all the trees have been removed. And about 20 to 30 years after a clear cut site, you have this secondary growth, or these young even age forest stands. You can see it's really dark in here. I've actually lightened up the picture a lot, and it looks good on the computer. But you have a lot of small and tightly compacted trees. So this doesn't allow for a lot of light to penetrate through this canopy. And you see there's not a lot of vegetation on the ground either, so not a lot of animals are living in this type of environment. And a main concern to forest management is that this secondary growth can last over 100 years before it starts to kind of resemble an old growth environment. In the 1950s, there was intensive logging in the Tongass National Forest, and this created over 430,000 acres of these young, even-age forest stands. So in 2001, forest management developed this program called the Tongass-Wide Young Growth Studies, or TWIGS. And they developed some different kinds of thinning methods in order to try to hasten this recovery process and improve the habitat for old growth species. And so some of these twig sites are on Prince of Wales Island. Arthropods can be used as ecological indicators, which are species that convey information that's difficult to measure, such as biodiversity or rate of recovery after anthropogenic disturbances. And I decided to use beetles and spiders as indicators of forest recovery. So my main goal was to determine the effects of these thinning methods on forest biota. And to do this, I had two objectives. One was to compare beetle and spider species richness, diversity, and assemblages of these thin sites to secondary growth, old growth, and clear cuts. And the second objective was to try to determine if there was any beetles and spiders that were highly associated with any one forest type. For my study design, I had 3 controls with 6 replicates each of old growth, clear cuts, and secondary growth. And then I had 3 treatments with 2 replicates each of 14-foot spacing left between trees left standing after thinning, 16-foot spacing, and 18-foot spacing. And this gave me a total of 24 sites on the northern side of Prince Wales Island. And just to kind of blow up a group of those sites to show you, that the thin secondary growth and the secondary growth unthin sites were paired sites, and the clear cut and old growth sites were unpaired sites. So for all 24 sites, I took samples every 2 weeks, and from mid-May to mid-August, from 2 Lindgren funnels to help catch flying arthropods, 4 pairs of pitfall traps with a ruler in between each pair to maximize catch, and 1 Berlaisi funnel sample. And this was done for 2 years. The spider data is from 2010, and the beetle data is from 2010 and 2011. I also conducted vegetation surveys at each site with line transect surveys to look at cover and vascular plants, tree height, diameter at breast height, or DBH, and leaf area index was calculated using AccuPart, and then basal area, which is the total cross-sectional area that is taken up by stems and trunks in a stand. So the statistics I used to analyze the data was the Shannon Diversity Index to look at the diversity of beetles and spiders, species richness, or the total amount of species, and I did did ANOVA and T-test to see if there was any significant differences between the diversity and the species richness. And then I used multi-dimensional scaling and the Bray-Curtis similarity matrix to look at the assemblages of beetles and spiders, and MP-MANOVA to look to see if there's any differences between those assemblages, and SEMPER to characterize those assemblages. And then for the vegetation data, I did some overlays and correlations for the vegetation to the MDS or multi-dimensional scaling plot. And then BioMV is a program that's a multivariate measure, and what it does is it looks at combinations of vegetation variables and how that correlates to directly to the biotic structure. And I did have to remove the subfamily Alliocharinae from the family Staphylinidae. I'd removed that from analyses due to extremely difficult identification. It requires dissecting genitalia. And I also had to group the thinned treatments together to increase statistical power, since I only had 2 reps per thinned treatment. So starting with the spider data, I had 57 species with 4,805 adults. Looking at the log abundance versus species rank graph, I had the highest amount of species in clear cuts, and that was followed by thins, old growth, and secondary growth. And then I had the highest abundance in the thins, followed by the secondary growth, old growth, and clear cuts. So for objective one, I wanted to compare the diversity and species richness of the spiders from the thin sites to the other habitats. And for the diversity, I graphed the mean Shannon index for each habitat with 95% confidence intervals. I found that there was no significant differences between any of the habitats. And I also graphed the mean species richness for each habitat with 95% confidence intervals. And again, I found no significant difference between any of those habitats. Also for objective one, I wanted to compare the spider assemblages from the thin sites to the other type of habitats. And I did that by using the multidimensional scaling plot. And so on this plot are all the sites, and the closer the sites are together, the more they are similar in spider assemblages. So here I have clear cuts grouping towards the right of the graph, old growth sites grouping towards the left. Pretty large overlap with the secondary growth sites with the old growth assemblages, and thins towards the middle of the graph. May possibly also have an outlier here with an old growth site. So then I ran MP-MANOVA to see if there was any significant differences with the thinned assemblages to the other habitats. I found that the spider assemblages from the thins were significantly different from clear cuts, old growth, and secondary growth. In fact, all of these habitats were different from each other except for the old growth and secondary growth sites, where you can see there's quite a large overlap in spider assemblages. So then I ran that SEMPER program, and what that does is it looks at the average contribution from each species to the total dissimilarity between pairs of habitats that are significantly different from each other. So, and from that, I got that there was 29 species accounting for 90% of the difference between thins and old growth, 27 species accounting for 90% of the difference between thins and secondary growth, and 32 species accounting for 90% of the difference between thins and clear cuts. Another really cool thing about SEMPER is that it lets you look at which species consistently contributes to the difference between pairs of habitats. And so I just gave a very small subset of species that were shown to be highly associated with old growth and secondary growth, clear cuts, and thins. The species that have asterisks are species that are highly associated with thins when compared to clear cuts. And then this one species right here is highly associated with thins when compared to old growth and secondary growth. So showing also that thins are a mix of old growth, secondary growth, and clear cut associated species. And then go into the vegetation data. So these are vegetation overlays for each vegetation variable. And the larger the circle is, the higher the value of the variable, and the smaller the circle, the smaller the value. So starting off with height, of course you have taller trees in the old growth area. You have, I can barely read that, I need glasses. Larger DBH in the old growth sites, and you have higher leaf area index than the secondary growth in old growth sites. And then you also have a larger basal area in the secondary growth in old growth sites. But you have more plant cover in the thins and the clear cut sites. And then looking at how each vegetation variable correlates to the multidimensional scaling axes, you have leaf area index coming out with the highest correlation to axis one, followed by height and basal area. And then looking at axis two, we have a high negative correlation with the plant cover, percent plant cover. Then running BioMV, which again looks at, it's a multivariate measure looking at different combinations of vegetation variables and how that directly correlates to the biotic structure. The highest correlation was with the combination of height, leaf area index, and cover. And it's moderately correlated with biotic structure, about 0.3265. Looking at the beetle data, I had 213 species with 23,586 individuals. And that's why it is taking me so long to get to where I am today. So, looking at the log abundance versus species rank graph, you have the highest amount of species in clear cuts and the lowest amount of species in secondary growth, with about the same amount of species in old growth and thins. And then you have the highest abundance in the clear cuts and about the same with the old growth, secondary growth, and thin sites. Again, objective one, wanted to compare the diversity and the species richness of the beetles of the thin sites to the other habitats. Again, I did not find any significant differences when it came to diversity between the habitats, but for species richness, I did find that there was a higher species richness in clear cuts and old growth when compared to the secondary growth sites. Again, for objective one, comparing the beetle assemblages of the thin sites to the other habitats. And I got old growth sites towards the middle, secondary growth sites towards the right. But the beetle assemblages from the thin sites were highly variable. And then the clear cut sites also did not group all together. However, I just want to point out that these two clear cut sites are very fresh, where these ones are just a few years older. So then I ran MPMANOVA and found that there was no significant differences with the thin beetle assemblages with the other habitats. But I did find that old growth, secondary growth, and the clear cut habitats were significantly different from each other when it comes to beetle assemblages. I went ahead and ran Semper, not only just to show you guys that there's species that are highly associated with these three habitats, but to show you guys that since thins are not significantly different from any of these habitats, it's showing that it's a mix of these species from old growth, clear cuts, and secondary growth. So again, vegetation correlations, it's pretty much showing the same thing, that where you have tall trees in the old growth, larger DBH in the old growth, more leaf area index with the old growth and secondary growth sites, higher basal area with the secondary growth and old growth sites, and a higher plant vegetation cover in the thins and the clear cut sites. And then looking again at vegetation correlations to the MDS axes, again, the highest correlation is leaf area index. It's negatively correlated with axes one, and that's followed by basal area. And there was really low correlations with the rest of the vegetation variables when it came to axis two. Running BioMV, the highest correlation was just leaf area index by itself to the biotic structure at 0.4681. So a moderate correlation. So to remind you guys, my goal was to determine the effects of thinning methods on forest biota, and I found that not all animals are affected the same by these thinning methods. So for spiders, thins seem to be a unique habitat where some spider species were actually highly associated with these thins. But for beetles, thins were not these unique habitats. Some thins are not more similar to a specific habitat over another. However, for both beetles and spiders, I found that thins did provide a habitat where species associated from different kinds of habitats could coexist together. And then the twig's goal was, well, are these thins actually hastening this recovery process and improving the habitat for old growth species? Well, the thins weren't significantly more similar to old growth sites than other habitats, but my results are similar to other studies, such as Pohl et al., which showed that thins were a habitat where both old growth and clear-cut species could coexist together. And with that, I will take any questions.
A lot of these, the vegetational characteristics that you use to try to look at relationships.
The vegetation?
Yeah. DBH and vegetation and that. It may not be what the insects are immediately tracking on. What was your sense of what habitat factors like on the forest ground may have been more important?
Well, leaf area index was one that seemed to have the highest correlation with beetles and spiders. But something I really wanted to do that we just didn't have enough time to do would be temperature. I would have really liked to put temperature sensors in all of these sites because those secondary growth sites and also old growth sites are pretty dang cold in there when it's cloudy outside and a lot warmer when you go into a thin site or a clear cut site. So something along those lines, I would kind of like to look at that too, but there's definitely some vegetation variables that I may not have measured.
And yeah, just curious, just follow up, are these beetles using the needles, the leaves themselves as habitat, or are there more direct variables that may have been diversity, like the amount of dead wood on the ground or moss depth and
right.
Moisture levels,
yeah, I didn't do any soil sampling, and then, yeah, the amount of dead wood, or not even, oh, yeah. So these thin sites are pretty amazing to where they thin them and then they just leave all these trees there, so there's a lot of rotten wood there, but it's not, I've read a lot of papers to it. Old growth trees are really huge and provide a whole bunch of different kind of habitats for beetles, but the smaller trees don't provide as much resources. So that would have been cool to look at as well. Yeah.
How did you account for like edge effects?
Edge effects. So yeah, these traps were definitely haphazard. I would just walk into the site a good 100 meters and then set the sites up there so that I was trying not to get any edge effects from the road and also trying not to get any edge effects, especially since the thinned secondary growth and the secondary growth unthinned were paired sites, so they were right next to each other. Trying to make sure that I was within really deep within this forest site so that that wouldn't happen.
I got a question about your MDS analysis too. You were running in correlation on the different axes.
Yes.
What were you looking for?
I was just trying to look and see. Let me go back. So, just looking at the groupings of here's old growth and secondary growth, and I was just trying to see, like for instance, here's height. I was trying to see if this height is correlated with the old growth and the secondary growth. Yeah, this is a technique that I previously just learned in a data analysis class. Yes.
Do you think that your collection methods did a good job at collecting what was available in each of those habitats?
Right, so I'm actually working on that right now with Estimate S to see if I actually did a very thorough job of getting the amount of species that were in each of those sites. So
okay.
Yeah, I'm working on
okay,
that.
Good. How do you feel though?
Feel pretty good. I definitely, something that I guess to notice is this program has, I've been working on this for 4 years, and even though I'm only analyzing the first 2 years of data, we've only had a few new species come into the project the second 2 years. So that shows that I've probably, hopefully, done a good job of getting as many species as there are in there.
Unless you're missing the same ones.
The same.
Consistently.
Same
one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you get up into the canopy at all? Like, As I know that I've trapped a lot in thinnings and clear cuts, and sometimes just the height difference makes a huge difference in what species you get.
You mean in elevation or actually climbing
up
that tree?
No, actually in the stand, yeah. Not elevation, in the stand.
Yeah, I did not. I'm a little scared of heights.
Well.
So. No, I didn't think about going up into the canopy, but that would have been interesting though.
And the thin set compared to non-thin set, they're both clear set, but in one case they remove all the lumber and the tree, the dead fall?
No, they didn't remove them, they just cut them.
They just cut them.
I couldn't understand.
Yeah, they just let them fall.
Oh, yep.
So the right for the ground vegetation in one case and not in the other case?
The trees that have fallen on the ground are obviously blocking some of the ground below.
Right.
There's
right.
A lot of
but
light coming in
the
thin.
Yeah,
right. There's a lot
they
of vegetation
kind of
still coming in.
They didn't. They just dropped them.
Yep. Just dropped them.
So
and they're like little trap doors too. They'll just be staying there, and all of a sudden, bam!
Yeah,
you fall through, and
really
you're up and well, I'm up to my elbow.
Yeah.
It's
really
yeah.
Hard to work in.
It is. Needed cleats on my.
So were those. Most of your thin sites, were they recently thinned or thinned?
The thinning took place between 2002 and 2006.
Oh, okay. Okay.
For this Twigs project?
For the Twigs project, yes.
Mm-hmm. So the clear filling, were they just cutting up the trees on
In the clear cuts, the thins though, they cut the trees and then just left them sitting.
It's pretty controversial because it'd take a lot of money and effort to remove that slashed.
I think they also wanted to try to leave some dead wood there to help
but
out with.
As far as deer and wildlife benefits, it's hard to see them right away.
Mm-hmm.
And they try to cut as many branches off as possible so it lays flat against the wet, moist ground
right,
and degrades
right.
Quicker, but it doesn't always
do
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you're like 5 feet off the ground.
Yeah,
and when I fall here, I'm like, oh.
So do you think clear cutting is a bad thing?
Yeah. They lose $10 million of taxpayer money every year in their timber program. What's that?
So clear cutting is a bad thing.
I wouldn't say it's a bad thing. I just think it's kind of nice that there's a way to try to keep reusing the same stands over and over so that you don't go into an old growth forest stands and have to cut that out. Because that's what the Twigs program is trying to do too, is trying to hasten this recovery process, but also to give more resources per tree so that they can eventually cut those back down again. I wouldn't say it's necessarily
bad. Well, I guess old growth, there's one point where the tree become decadent.
Yeah, I'm having a
hard time. Yeah. If you look at my property, all the birch are bad. The center is totally rotten, and from outside they look okay.
Oh, I see.
But from a side point of this wood is worthless.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it is an optimal age for the cutting of the trees. There's an optimum age where the tree reaches a certain width before it starts rotting from the inside.
Oh, yeah, I'm not quite familiar with that.
Yeah, we can have a pretty long discussion about management techniques and things like that. I know, depending on what the management goal is,
right.
Clear cutting is frequently preferred to doing things like high grading or selective logging
because
when you're doing that, you're not disturbing the ground. For instance, in the interior, they'll go through and they'll selectively cut the large spruce and then leave the birches and stuff, and that opens up the forest to the point where you get column agressus grass and things that grow that have root sod thicknesses of a couple of feet. In some cases up to 5 feet deep, and new spruce seedlings cannot get established in that, and then you have this decadent birch stand that's literally stable for 50 or 100 years like that until a fire or something else comes up and makes it a clear cut. or the equivalent thereof. So it depends on the management goal, and you know, if you got them going into selective log, I'd recommend that you have them just tear it up, skid around, and everything else. Just tear up that moss layer, or else that it just you won't get regeneration. It can't growing through those grass roots. So anyway,
all right, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.